What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Common Sense with Dr. Ben Carson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Common Sense. I'm your host, Dr. Ben Carson. And, perhaps one of the most interesting revelations that came out of the pandemic we were just in was the need for some reform of our educational system. Now, education is the key to being successful. It really doesn't matter what background you come from in this country. If you get a good education, you write your own ticket. School boards have become ideological battlegrounds recently for such issues as transgender policies and book bans, social and racial justice, preferred pronouns. You know, what about reading, writing, and arithmetic? What about the reason that we had schools in the first place? And one of the things that helped us to accelerate, you know, from nowhere in the world to the pinnacle of the world was the fact that we believed in educating our people. And it was John Adams who said that our system is based on a well-informed and educated populace. And why did he say that? Because people who are uninformed are very easy to manipulate. And, I'm always amused, but kind of alarmed also when I see these man on the street interviews and they're asking them basic questions. And they have no idea what you're talking about. Now, how are those people going to make good decisions? It's a real problem. And that's why education is so important. You know, parental rights was a big flashpoint heading into the midterm elections. And, parents begin to see education as one of the big issues facing our country. So today, we are very fortunate to have with us Corey DeAngelis, a big proponent of funding students instead of funding the system. And he's going to talk about school choice and a number of different things. But he's also a senior fellow at the American Federation for Children, the executive director at Educational Freedom Institute, an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, a senior fellow at Reason Foundation, and in his spare time, a board member at Liberty Justice Center. He's a very busy guy, was named in Forbes 30 Under 30, and is just an example of a young person who is getting involved, who has plenty of energy and is going to make a difference in our society. So welcome, Corey. And, what a big year this has been for school choice. You know, we saw a lot of concern by parents all over this country about education. I visited lots of places where people told me they were running for the school board. They were getting involved. They were going to the meetings for the first time. But, before we talk about the midterms and what happened there, how did this become such a big issue in our country? What happened?
Yeah, well, over the past couple of years, the teachers unions really overplayed their hands and awakened a sleeping giant, parents who want more of a say in their kids' education. So they fought to keep the schools closed. The AFT and the NEA and other teachers unions actually lobbied the CDC to keep the schools closed longer than just about any other industry or business. I mean, the private schools are fighting to reopen, the public schools are fighting to keep their doors closed, and the difference there, the main difference, is one of incentives. One of those sectors gets children's education dollars regardless of whether they even open their doors for business. But it was actually even worse than that, because the public school system and the teachers unions understood that they could hold children's education hostage to secure multiple multi-billion dollar ransom payments from the taxpayer. They actually benefited from keeping their schools closed. The grocery stores were open. You had hypocrisy left and right. You had the Chicago Teachers Union board member vacationing in Puerto Rico in person while railing against going back to work in person. You had some places, the public schools were closed for learning, but then they were open for childcare services while charging families out of pocket up to $400 per student per week, in addition to what they were already paying through their property taxes. So families had to pay twice, and they were getting the short end of the stick. But that's just part of the problem here. Families got to see that the school system didn't care about their needs all that much because it didn't have to. But then secondly, the silver lining was that families who thought that their kids were in great public schools, whether that was an A-rated school by the state, or maybe their kids were coming home with report card scores that were on the honor roll, or maybe they had high standardized test scores in math and reading, the same family started to see that there's another dimension of school quality, which is arguably more important in some cases, which is whether that school's curriculum aligns with their values. And families started to wake up because they started to see that they were sending their kids to institutions that were essentially indoctrinating them for 13 years without any exit options. And those families have woken up, they're never going back to sleep, and they're pushing back at the school board meetings, like you said, but they're also pushing back at the ballot box too. So during the midterms, there wasn't a red wave, there wasn't really a blue wave, but there was a school choice wave. 76% of the candidates supported by my organization, the American Federation for Children, won their races on Tuesday. And you don't even have to ask me or look at my data. You can look at our ideological adversaries in the New Yorker, where there was liberal tears coming out on the pages when they said something along the lines of, "Education freedom advocates fared depressingly well in the midterms." Well, they can cry harder, because although that's not great news for socialists who want to control other people's kids, it's fantastic news for families who want more of a say in their own kids' education.
Absolutely.
But I can keep going on other victories we've had too, because of parent revolution that's been sparked by the teachers unions. It's their own fault.
Well, it's very interesting also that the schools cried about, let's follow the science, and they're not paying any attention to the science whatsoever, which indicates that the likelihood of a child dying from COVID or having a severe complication is 0.025%. We have no idea whatsoever what the long-term risks are 10 or 15 years from now. And yet we want to trade almost 0% risk for unknown future risk. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It certainly is not consistent with science.
They weren't following the science, Dr. Carson. They were following the political science. They were listening to special interests as opposed to the needs of the families on the ground. And you didn't need a lot of studies, but we had tons of evidence showing the huge negative effects academically and mentally on students from keeping the schools closed. And we also had consistent evidence showing that the schools could reopen safely, but you didn't even need these rigorous studies to figure this out. You just had to open your eyes and see right in front of you that, well, the private schools are open, the daycares are open. The same person who says it's too dangerous to go into work is doing all these other things. You had Gavin Newsom at the French Laundry. There was so much hypocrisy going on nonstop that I think was more illuminating than anything to families. And look, yeah, you had Randy Weingarten and the teachers unions were essentially the CDC directors when they were influencing the guidelines to keep the schools closed as long as possible. The way to fix that is school choice. I mean, if you look, there's a study by Michael Hartney and Leslie Finger that was published in 2021, I believe, in a peer-reviewed journal, finding that places that had more Catholic schools in the area, all else equal after controlling for different demographic characteristics and other factors, the public schools were more likely to open too. suggesting that there was a competitive response, that if you had more exit options for families, well, maybe the public schools start to think, well, I'm funded based on enrollment. If I lose some students, I'll lose some money. Maybe I should open my doors too, just like the Catholic schools had to do in order to stay in business. The private sector knew that if they had to close their doors, they might have to remain closed for good. And that did happen to many private schools and private businesses over the past few years. But look, the other thing is we've had a ton of victories. In 2021, we actually called it the year of school choice. We had 19 states enact or expand programs to fund students as opposed to systems. And then this year in 2022, we had the biggest school choice victory in U.S. history coming out of Arizona. Yes. Governor Doug Ducey just recently signed into law a program that allows every single family, regardless of income, regardless of background, regardless of zip code, to take their children's state-funded education dollars, happens to be about $7,000 per student in Arizona. You can take it to the education provider of your choosing. You can take it to a public school if you like.
How do they actually get their hands on that money? How does that work?
Yeah, you go to the Arizona Department of Education website and you applied, and basically everybody's eligible if you have school-aged children in Arizona. So it's not that difficult of an application process. And once you're eligible for that funding and you're enrolled in the program, the funding goes into something actually called an education savings account that's directed by the parent, kind of like a health savings account. You can only use it with a health savings account for health expenditures. For education savings accounts, you can only use the funding for education expenditures. So that could be, again, the public school if you want to go there. If you like your public school, you can keep your public school. But if not, you can take the money to a charter school, a private school, home-based education like homeschool curriculum, private tutoring. These pandemic pods that sprouted up, you could have used this funding for those 5 to 10 children getting together in a household to economize on the process of homeschooling. Some people refer to this as micro schooling, which has already happened on a pretty large scale in Arizona. Families are already using these ESA funds to pay for micro schools. So this should lead to innovation in education. And I will say, yes, you have to go apply for the funds just to make sure you're a resident of the state and that you do have children so that you're not just pocketing the cash. Of course, we want to prevent any fraud that could happen.
And there are other mechanisms that are being talked about as ways to provide the same kind of funding too. Can you tell us about some of those other mechanisms?
Yeah, totally. So a lot of states are pushing these education savings accounts, but there's also funding like vouchers. It's a little more simplistic in that the funding that would have followed you to the assigned government-run school, again, you could still take it there. That option is still and should be on the table. But if not, that funding would come in the form of the voucher. And if you choose a private school, it would go to the private school directed by the choice of the family. The difference is it doesn't go into a savings account where you can use it on a whole multitude of different services. Both are a step in the right direction, but the ESA does allow for more customization on the part of the family. And the one other big one is something called a tax credit scholarship. And there is a couple federal bills that outline this proposal as well. I think Bill Cassidy has one floating around. I believe Senator Tim Scott had one called the School Choice Now Act, a similar concept. But the idea is you donate private funding to something called a scholarship granting organization. You get a benefit for making that donation. It's a charitable contribution. Other families go to that scholarship granting organization to get the private funding to take to pay for private school tuition and fees or other private providers such as tutoring, textbooks. So it's just a private way to fund school choice as opposed to having the taxpayer dollars directly fund the scholarships.
That is extremely useful information. I hope people are paying attention because I think this is going to become a bigger and bigger issue. You know, it started out in Virginia. I thought it was fascinating that the FBI and various organizations were brought in to persecute and intimidate parents, labeling them as terrorists, which is pretty amazing, but it's consistent with the state-run philosophy. And, you know, it was Vladimir Lenin who said, give me your children to teach for 4 years and the seed that I sow will never be uprooted. You know, they want control. They want control of your children. They want control of who they are. They know that those young minds are very fertile ground for implantation of things that really shouldn't be going on in our public schools. And school choice, homeschooling, all those things are expanding at an incredibly rapid rate. There's twice as many homeschools now as there were in 2020, and that's continuing to grow. I think this is a situation where the people are going to help solve the problem. You can't really expect the government necessarily to solve a problem, because what the governments do, they all do the same thing. They grow, they infiltrate, and they dominate. And that's why our founders worked so hard to give us a constitution that would allow us, the people, to determine direction of the country. And this is one of the primary mechanisms, I think, whereby that can be done. But I wanted to ask you about some of the radical gender ideologies for some of our young children. And, you know, the policy about keeping these things from the parents. Can you think of any justification for such things?
I mean, you kind of got to it in your preface, in that a lot of these people who oppose educational freedom, they believe that they have the right to determine how other people's children learn and how they ought to be raised. And that's the main conflict here, that parents just want their kids to get an education as opposed to indoctrination. They want to instill those values into their children themselves at home. And I think parents rightfully see that that's their role, not society's role, not the government's role, and not the school's role. So families may agree with some of the curriculum that's happening in the school, but maybe they want it taught in the way that they want it to be taught, instead of having it taught in a way that's either not aligned with their values, or maybe it's too much of a sensitive subject when it's not the child's own parent. And then, by the way, the schools aren't even doing a good job on the basics, math, reading, writing. If they haven't figured that out, how should we trust those same institutions to do a good job with things that are arguably more important, that have to do with values alignment? But look, this is a conflict that is deeply seated in a lot of people's views in the current system. And they've been so drunk on power for so long when it comes to the teachers unions, I don't think they can reverse course. And that's bad news in the short run, but I think in the long run, it's great news, because parents have woken up and this is going to keep them awake. They're going to continue pushing back against the system. And the way that I put it before is that, look, for far too long in K-12 education, the only special interests essentially represented the employees in the system. But now there's a new special interest group in town. The kids have a union of their own, and they're called parents. They're pushing back. And again, they're not just showing up at the school board meetings. They're showing up at the ballot box too. And whether we like it or not, politicians don't respond or listen to logic all that much. A lot of them have to respond to power. And the parents are this new special interest, and it's a revolution that's occurring to where they're making some politicians think. And I think this will actually lead to some more, hopefully, bipartisan support of school choice. It's been the GOP leading on the issue. I mean, look at what Glenn Youngkin did in Virginia against Terry McAuliffe, who said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." That backfired on Terry,
man,
the Democrat.
That was a gift.
Yeah, and look, that led to Glenn Youngkin winning on the issue of education by 2 points in a state that went 10 points just the year before to Joe Biden. So that was a huge swing, and that's a blueprint for success that Youngkin tapped into. More Republicans should follow his lead and lean into parental rights as a political winner.
And not just Republicans, but, you know, there are a number of Democrats who are pro-school choice and who did quite well in the election, too.
That's right. And I think the reason that we're seeing some of the political tides shifting and it becoming more bipartisan is that if Republicans are winning on the issue, it becomes more politically disastrous for Democrats to oppose it. And so you had some high profile Democratic gubernatorial candidates who won their midterm elections actually come out and support a school choice less than 2 months before the election. One of them was
when
the first
were
one was
against it before.
They were. You had a teachers union endorsed and funded Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania. He was way up in the polls already, but 2 months before the election, for whatever reason, he felt the need to explicitly put these education savings accounts in his education platform. And a lot of people are theorizing about why that could be. You know, maybe he was just reading the tea leaves. Maybe it was, you know, it's probably not a true change of heart, some people were saying. But my take is it doesn't really matter what the underlying reason for that is. As Milton Friedman once said, it's not about getting the right people elected into office. It's about creating a political climate of public opinion that makes it politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right things. And I think it's becoming politically profitable to support parents and education freedom, again, because parents are pushing back and holding politicians accountable. That could lead to bipartisan support on a wide scale for school choice.
I think it's a wonderful example of what people can do. And we'll be right back with our wonderful guest, Corey DeAngelis.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, and we're back once again with Corey DeAngelis, a young and vigorous voice for school choice and for what schools really should be doing for our children. And Corey, why exactly do you think the unions are so against the whole concept of choice? I mean, aren't they supposed to be pro-education?
They're supposed to be, but you look at the NEA's, you know, annual meeting in 2019, they actually voted down a resolution to recommit their organization towards student learning as their number one priority. Well, they're a teachers union, not a kids union. They look out for their members, and I would argue they don't even treat their members all that well. I mean, the national unions are making teachers look bad, one, by pushing to keep the schools closed and politicizing education. Look at Randy Weingarten, AFT's president's Twitter feed on a daily basis. I mean, she was just in Australia for whatever reason. She was in Ukraine going to assess the situation, as she put it in a tweet. And she's always railing against conservatives. Well, you know what? There's a lot of conservative teachers, and even the non-conservative teachers, a lot of them don't want to get into politics, and they feel like their views are being represented by the national leaders. So that's one problem that the unions have. But the other problem is that they don't invest the funding in the classroom towards the teachers. So since 1970 in the U.S., for example, per pupil education expenditures have increased by about 152% after adjusting for inflation, but teacher salaries have only increased by about 8% over that same period. And the problem is that the unions have an incentive to put more people into the buildings, which means more dues-paying members so that they can contribute to political campaigns. Has nothing to do with education, has nothing to do with the individual teachers. And so when I hear teachers complaining about having to pay for supplies each year, I do actually feel kind of bad for them. And the reason for that, but the problem isn't with their competition, the private and charter schools. The problem is that their employer, the district, is a geographic monopoly that has no incentive to spend additional dollars wisely. But look, the teachers unions oppose school choice overall as hard as possible because, look, they currently have a good setup in that families live in a particular place and they're forced to go to their government-run institutions, more likely to be staffed by union members than the other providers of the service.
Yes.
It's a good gig. I mean, if I was Safeway and I could force customers to shop at my store just based on where they live, I'm sure Safeway would probably be happy about that. But the thing is, It shouldn't be that way. The funding should follow the child. We spend about $16,000 per student per year, according to the 2020 Census Bureau data. It's probably a lot higher now after the COVID relief funding. Tons of money went into the school system. But that funding should go to the student as opposed to the institution, just like we do with Pell Grants for higher education. That's public money for college. The money goes to the student, and you can pick the public university or the community college if you want, but you don't have to. You can take that funding to a private, religious, or non-religious university. The funding follows the student. Same thing with pre-K. Think about the federal Head Start program. That money doesn't go to a residentially assigned pre-K provider. It goes to the family, and then they can choose a private, religious, or non-religious pre-K. We do the same thing with food stamps or WIC. The money goes to the family, and then they can choose Walmart or Safeway or Trader Joe's that they want, but they could also take the money to Publix or another provider. We do this with everything, basically. Medicaid dollars. You can take Medicaid public dollars to any type of hospital you want. You can take it to a religiously affiliated hospital, and nobody has a problem with that. It's only when it comes to K-12 education, because there's a difference in power dynamics. Choice is the norm with everything else and every other level of education. But choice threatens the teachers' unions when
Absolutely.
It comes to K-12.
And I think a lot of the teachers are coerced into joining who really don't want to. And when you look at the number of teachers, about 20% of teachers are new each year. That means a lot of particularly young teachers drop out of the system. They just get so frustrated with it. And they decide to go and do something else, which is unfortunate because in many cases, they would be the very best teachers. But so often, they're not allowed to teach what they want to teach or use inventive methods that they've come up with. They have to do what the school board tells them to do. And that's very frustrating for someone who's creative.
That's right. Look, competition in the market for goods and services is obviously good for customers, families, and their students, but competition in the labor market can be good for employees too. And there's actually been 5 studies I've seen on the topic. I wrote about it at the Washington Examiner in a post called School Choice Benefits Teachers Too. All 5 of those studies have found positive, statistically significant effects of private and charter school competition on the teacher salaries in the public schools too. And that's because the districts start to have an incentive to listen to the needs of teachers, put more of the money into the classroom as opposed towards administrative bloat. And you see higher salaries in the public sector too. I actually remember a Washington Post article during the pandemic period about a New Jersey public school teacher had been in the system for decades, decided to leave and start her own micro school with, you know, about 5 to 10 children in the household. Cut out a lot of the middleman expenses, cut out a lot of the fixed costs, and more of the money could go directly to the teacher. And she enjoyed it because she had a smaller class size, 10 or so versus, you know, 30 or 40 in the public school system. A lot less red tape. She was able to teach the way that she wanted, and actually ended up earning more than what she was earning in the New Jersey public school system. Now, imagine if in New Jersey, they spend about, nearly $30,000 per student. In some places like Camden, New Jersey, they spend over $40,000 per student per year. Imagine if that followed the individual families and the students, and then more of that could go directly to the teacher. You'd have a lot more teachers exiting the system. And I think that frightens the teachers' unions as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. And another thing that happened this past year, looking at the fourth grade and the eighth grade reading and math scores, a significant decline. The fourth grade went from 220 to 217 for reading. For math, they went from, in 2019, 241 down to 236 in 22. In the eighth grade, from 263 in 2019 to 260 in reading, and from 282 to 274 in math. I mean, those are some pretty big drops. And, you know, when you talk about the risk of a problem from COVID versus the risk from being non-educated, they're two completely different categories. And this is particularly the case when you look at a lot of our inner city schools. You know, you have school systems like Baltimore where very few, if anybody, you know, really graduates at 12th grade functional level. And what does that do for a person's opportunities when you stop and think about it? It's devastating. And many of them are functionally illiterate, and they can't read an application. They certainly can't fill one out. They can't communicate in a reasonable way. And think about how that limits your opportunities. It's criminal. And it's sort of a dumbing down that's happening. And if our population is dumbed down, they become much easier to manipulate. And, you know, sometimes you have to wonder, are we so stupid that we don't know how to educate the kids, or are there other motives going on here? I do have to wonder about that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, this is why school choice is so important, that even if you don't care about education policy and you think you care about more about economics or something else, or tax policy, school choice will affect all of those things in the end. You can't undo 13 years of indoctrination and expect our country to go on a better trajectory. Again, if we don't have an educated populace, all of those other policies will be negatively affected in the long run. But look, it is true that the nation's report card scores dropped tremendously, the biggest drop that we had ever seen since the start of the nation's report card assessments. And the teachers unions essentially traded in $200 billion for two decades of learning. It was a huge error, but those scores didn't drop as much in Catholic schools. In fourth grade math, for example, you mentioned that there was a 5-point drop overall in the public schools, but then in the Catholic schools, they didn't lose any ground whatsoever in fourth grade math. And they had their schools opened basically the entire time. And the Catholic school results actually had been parsed out by someone by the name of Porter McGee, I believe, in the Wall Street Journal, who wrote that if the Catholic schools across the country were their own state, they'd be ranked the number one state in the U.S. for the nation's report card scores. And school choice is also about equality of opportunity. Whether we like it or not, the most advantaged in society already have school choice in a way. They can already afford to pay out of pocket, or at least be more likely to do so, to pay for a private school tuition and fees out of pocket. The most advantaged are more likely to be assigned to the better, quote unquote, public schools that currently discriminate on the basis of zip code. Funding the student directly with that $16,000 or so would allow for more families to access educational opportunities. So in that sense, school choice is an equalizer at the same time. There's no reason that anybody should be against this unless they're trying to protect their monopoly and keep the gravy train going. But if you care about students and families, there's no good reason to oppose allowing the money to follow the child.
That's such a good point. And, you know, the way that schools are funded through millage systems, if your school is located in a poor area, you don't get the funding that's necessary. You know, poorly equipped laboratories, it's often second-hand books, not the kind of incentives that we want for the teachers to be there. And school choice completely levels that field, and it's something I think we all should be very excited about. Another question I had for you, some Republicans in places like Tennessee were endorsed by teacher unions. You think this is a sign of a major shift?
Well, the shift is that parents are paying attention to which Republicans are getting endorsed by the teachers unions. And in a sense, education freedom is becoming a GOP litmus test issue. In the Tennessee House primaries, for example, 10 Republicans in the House are running for House in Tennessee were endorsed or funded by the teachers unions out there. 9 of them lost their races. So in a sense, the teachers union endorsement is becoming the political kiss of death, particularly when it comes to Republican primaries, as it should be, especially when you look again at like Randy Weingarten's union, AFT. In 2022, in the election cycle, 99% of their political contributions went to Democrats as opposed to Republicans. So that 1% or less of the Republicans getting that funding, they might not actually be Republicans. They might just have an R next to their name. And this occurred all across the country, too. families were, this was especially notable in Tennessee, however, but the candidates supported by my group, the American Federation for Children, in the primaries did really well. I believe about 3/4 of them won their primary races or their runoffs this past election cycle. So school choice is becoming a GOP litmus test issue, and it really shouldn't be partisan. But at the end of the day, when you start to think about who is receiving money from the teachers unions, it actually makes it kind of difficult for Democrats to oppose the teachers unions, which is partially their own fault for accepting that influence for so long. And for the GOP, if this puts the Democrats in a catch-22 situation. I think this is what we saw with Terry McAuliffe in Virginia. When Terry McAuliffe had Randy Weingarten stumping for him the night before the election after saying, I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach, a lot of people said that that was a dumb idea, that he shouldn't have had her at his event, and that it was a poor political calculation. But I think that's all he could do, because he had already upset the parents. He's got this new special interest group, parents who want more of a say in their kids' education, pushing back against him. If he would have flipped back and started to signal against the teachers' unions, then he'd have two groups coming out against him. And so I think he just quadrupled down and stayed in favor of the teachers' unions as opposed to having two groups come out against him. But if a Republican wants to give a gift to Democrats, they'll stay quiet on education like they have for far too long. But if they want to win going forward, education can be a political winner for Republicans. There was actually a survey by Randy Weingarten's own union, AFT, in battleground states earlier this summer. I believe it was the results released in July. And it actually found Republicans up on the issue of education only by about 1 point. But if you look historically, that was a huge shift. I mean, in 2017, Gallup did a poll and found that Republicans were down on the issue of education by about 17 points. So going from 17 to plus one is a huge shift and a huge opportunity.
Well, it should be a huge opportunity for our country to actually come together, because it shouldn't be a Republican or a Democratic issue. You know, when you stop and think about it, we have about 330 million people. Sounds like a lot of people. But it's 1/4 of what China has, 1/4 of what India has. And we have to compete against them in the future, intellectually, which means we can't afford to throw away any of our kids, Republican, Democrat, city, suburb, it doesn't matter. And this needs to become an issue of national security. And until we begin to emphasize it that way, you know, I think we continue to give fodder to those who want to divide us on this issue. It should not be an issue of division. It's critical for the survival of our nation.
Yeah, and we're seeing some Democrats come out in support. Again, Josh Shapiro, he put Lifeline scholarships into his education platform. J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, I haven't mentioned yet. He vowed to get rid of their tax credit scholarship program for low-income kids back in 2017 and in 2018. And then 3 weeks before the election, he answered a candidate survey by Chicago Sun-Times explicitly saying that he supports the current tax credit scholarship program that he vowed to get rid of. And again, I don't care what the reason for that is. I don't care if he was just reading the polls. I don't care if he was had a true change of heart or not. At the end of the day, I would rather you truly change your mind about the issue. But it's good news for families in the long run, that there's more bipartisan support moving towards. Kathy Hochul in New York, during her final gubernatorial debate, she for the first time publicly said that she would support expanding or eliminating the cap on charter schools in New York City, which has been a big issue because they have wait lists in New York City charter schools, families desperate to get more options. And the Democratic governor in New York, who was just elected, supported for the first time publicly during the final debate right before the election, eliminating that cap.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be right back with our guests in a moment.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back once again with Corey DeAngelis. We've had a fascinating discussion about school choice. Corey, one of the things that has been quite interesting this year was a Supreme Court decision in Carson versus Macon, where the court ruled 6-3 that the state of Maine could not prevent the families from using generally available tuition assistance benefit at religious schools. That decision surprised a lot of people on the left, but what are your thoughts about the implications of that?
Yeah, it shouldn't be too surprising to anybody on the left or the right, because just 2 years ago in 2020, there was a similar case called Espinoza v. Montana, which ruled that you don't have to have a school choice program, but if you're going to have a private school choice program, you can't discriminate against religious families and schools by saying that you can only take the funding to non-religious private schools. So they made that clear in 2020. Well, Maine had a program that was doing that in this year, and they had a program that you could take the voucher only to a non-religious private school. It's an obvious way that the government was discriminating against religious people and religious schools. So that went to the circuit court, and the circuit court judge in Maine contorted logic like I've never seen before. It was so partisan, judicial activism, where they said, yeah, I know this. We just had precedent from this 2 years ago at the Supreme Court that said you couldn't discriminate against religious schools for being religious. But what we're doing in Maine, although it looks like the same thing, what we're doing is we're discriminating against schools for doing religious things, not for being religious, which is splitting hairs. It's a distinction without a difference. And then so this had to go up to the Supreme Court again. They ruled basically the same thing. You can't discriminate against religious schools for being religious or doing religious things, even though you're trying to contort logic to block a program and to block families from having school choice. So that was the main takeaway there. But they also put in the opinion of the court something that's very important as well, is they made it clear, which there's been precedent on this before as well, that the school choice programs do not violate the Establishment Clause. Some people will say, oh, school choice, we can't have that because that's a separation of church and state issue. One, the word separation of church and state, that phrase is not in the U.S. Constitution. But two, what they're referring to is the Establishment Clause. And school choice doesn't establish a state religion. And it doesn't violate this clause for the same reason that Pell Grants don't violate the Establishment Clause. You can take public money to private universities like Notre Dame, and nobody has a problem with it, and it's not a violation of the Establishment Clause because the primary beneficiary is the family or the student, and they have a choice in the matter between public and private, religious and non-religious institutions. We had a case, it was a Zelman versus Simmons-Harris in 2002, had to do with an Ohio voucher program. They ruled based on the same logic that school choice voucher programs do not violate the Establishment Clause because the families have a choice in the matter. The money goes to them. They can take it to public, private, religious, or non-religious. So that's that should give lawmakers and people on the ground as well extra motivation over the past couple of years that we had two big W's at the Supreme Court when it comes to school choice. And nobody should fear having a constitutional backlash against a program once it's enacted. So that should really embolden legislators to press on and move forward.
And, I can't emphasize strongly enough to parents that you're the captain of the ship in your home, not a bunch of bureaucrats, elected or non-elected. And you're the one who's really responsible for making sure that your children are successful. And a big part of that is their education. You know, my mother had less than a third grade education, but, you know, she worked as a domestic cleaning other people's houses, and they were nice houses. And she was a spy, and she was saying, why are these people doing so well? And she concluded that they read a lot of books. They were reading all the time, and she made me and my brother start reading all the time. We didn't want to. We'd much rather watch Gilligan's Isle. but we had to do it. And it completely changed the trajectory of our lives. And, you know, one of the things that my wife and I do is we put reading rooms in all over the country, particularly in Title I schools, where kids come from homes with few or no books, go to schools that have a poor library budget. They're not likely to become readers. And, you know, statistics show us that if a child is reading at grade level by grade 3, it changes the trajectory of their lives. These are the kinds of things that we need to be looking at and evaluating. And parents can't just complain about a system that doesn't change. They can become proactive. They can make choices. They can get elected to the school board. There's a whole host of things that they can do with their neighbors who feel similarly about what the school and education can do for us. And, you know, when de Tocqueville came to America in 1831 to study us, one of the things that really impressed him was our educational system, even in those little one-room schools. And the emphasis was incredible, and I think that's why we were able to accelerate so rapidly as a nation, and it's a lesson that we must take heartily. But I want to ask you for some of your closing thoughts and advice to parents who feel that maybe they are disenfranchised and helplessly watching their children suffer at the hands of public educational officials who, quite frankly, have no standards to live up to, no responsibility. They can do whatever they want to get paid the same thing. And what do you think?
Look, parents, you have real power, and the last 2 years and 2.5 years now has really demonstrated that. Look at the National School Boards Association. They tried to label you as domestic terrorists. That blew up in their faces, and that organization has essentially imploded upon themselves because parents didn't just sit down and shut up no matter how many times their organization or other members of the establishment tried to label them as some extremist or domestic terrorist. And 26 states in the past half a year or so have already left the National School Boards Association. We might as well rename them to, I don't know, the Regional School Boards Association at this point, because so many states have left. But the reason I bring this up, and the reason I'd like to bring up the midterm election results and other policies that have passed, is that parents are a voting bloc now. They're a special interest group, and you're not alone. Other parents are feeling the same thing. Look at the families showing up at the school board meetings, voicing their concerns. One thing you can do to help get people in your community behind you is you can start a Facebook group or other social media groups. That's a good way to have a support system. And you can also sign the Education Freedom Pledge, which is educationfreedompledge.com. And you can see what kind of bills are circulating in your state to reform education and to push for school choice. That's educationfreedompledge.com.
That is absolutely wonderful. Corey, thank you not only for being on the program, but for being a voice of reason, a voice for liberty and freedom and educational improvement in this country. You know, you're a very young man, but obviously very dynamic, and I think you're going to play a big role in getting us back to the right place in this country. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Dr. Carson.
Well, we'll be right back in a moment.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
Well, it was a great pleasure having Corey DeAngelis with us today to talk about education. You know, education really is the pathway out of poverty. You know, having grown up in dire poverty myself and remembering what it was like, sometimes that was the thing that really drove me on. Sometimes when I got discouraged, sometimes the academic pathway seemed so difficult. And I thought back on poverty and I said, you know, the educational pathway is not that tough when you look at the alternative. And we need to make sure that our children understand that the person who has the most to do with what happens to them is them. So they have to take some responsibility. Most education, quite frankly, is done outside of the classroom. But the classroom should stimulate your curiosity and guide you in the right directions and gives you the basic framework on which to continue your education, which should continue throughout your entire lifetime. But one of the big problems that we face right now is accountability. The public schools in particular, and especially in our inner cities, get enormous amounts of money per pupil, but they get that money whether that pupil fails or not. And there's a lot of social promotion that's going on. And as a result, we get people who are functionally illiterate. And that severely limits the choices that they have for making a living in life. So it's a real responsibility if we want to have a country that continues to accelerate and to do well, and to provide opportunities for everybody. Now, your homework assignment, and it should be easy to do because it's Thanksgiving week and you're going to have some free time and a lot of family around, in many cases, a lot of little children. I want you to look at the next episode of Star Spangled Adventures. You can find it at the website, littlepatriotslearning.com. It's free of choice, free of cost, and you will absolutely love it. The kids will absolutely love it. The newest episode is about George Washington's crossing the Delaware, the famous surprise attack that happened on Christmas in 1776. I think you and the kids will be duly impressed by what some of our founders went through to provide freedom and happiness for us. And I'd like to hear your thoughts about our latest episode. Write me, ben@americancornerstone.org. Tell me what your thoughts are. We may read it on our next episode. And make sure that you subscribe to Apple Podcasts for free, or Stitcher or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you don't miss any of the previous episodes. Rate us, review us, tell us what you think. Tell your friends and family and neighbors about us. And let's spread the whole concept of common sense. We're not each other's enemies. and let's not let anybody make us into enemies. Let's learn to work for the common good. And that's it for this week's show. Make sure you treasure the cornerstones: faith, liberty, community, and life. See you next week.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.